Good morning.
Hello,
afternoon,
everyone.
Evening. Yay! And you'll notice the sound is kind of extra awesome. Why is that, JP?
We have a fancy new microphone plugged into my laptop. And we are currently recording this podcast not over Skype.
Doop-a-doo.
We are in Chinatown in New York City.
New York Chinatown. Manhattan Chinatown.
Manhattan Chinatown.
Because we don't want to confuse that with the Queens Chinatown.
How many Chinatowns are there?
There's one per borough.
Wow.
Queens is the best. And I'm saying that as a Manhattanite at heart.
Okay, what?
And in my soul and all the things, because it was born in Manhattan.
What makes it the best?
It's the largest, and it's actually the most, you know, actually Chinese, right?
Oh.
It's got the most, in terms of authentic cuisine, in terms of authenticness, so much awesome happening there. Whereas I think New York Chinatown is really touristy.
Okay.
You know, it's like, here's where you go to see Chinatown versus here's where Chinese people go to buy their stuff.
Right.
There's a block right near where the 7 train is, where I think there's one sign on the whole block that's in English.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, like, the first time I turned, I was like, I stood there and I was like, this feels like not the United States. This is so badass that right in the middle of New York City is a street that looks like it would be from Shanghai.
Yeah, I really enjoy that.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool.
I've been here in New York for the past week doing a show at the New York Fringe Festival.
Woohoo!
And we figured that we would just take this opportunity to do some recording in person.
Yay!
So that we don't have to worry about Skype dropouts. Which are annoying.
We do have to worry, though, about JP's pants.
My pants are covered in white fluff because of this damn hotel blanket. I'm gonna guess that the vast majority of people who are listening to this podcast have really no idea what I look like. So, but my clothing choices. Basically, when you are somebody who wears all and exclusively black, white fluff shows up like crazy.
And it doesn't add to the look. It's not.
It's like my legs are constellations or something right now.
Oh, you know it would be so badass. I wish I had a black light right now. Is there a black light app? If there is, I'm going to find it, and I'm going to make you even more frustrated.
You know what? I can't imagine. Oh, my God. I can't actually imagine that there would be a blacklight app, just because I'm going to have to stop paying attention to it, or else I'm never going to.
Dude, don't sit there picking your pants. You're sitting there. I'm about to be like, take off your pants. And
one
of
piece
course,
of fluff at a
that
time.
That would be for no other purpose, except just to minimize your frustration.
Sure.
It was all part of my master plan.
White fluff. Bullshit. All right, I'm not going to freak out about this anymore. So here we are. Oh, and we're also going to keep this to half-hour chunks, because Audioboo still seems to enjoy half-hour chunks.
They hate me. Audioboo customer service is shitty. They had this whole thing, right, where it was like, sign up your friends and get an additional minute for every person who signs up.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I got 7 or 8 people to sign up, and I didn't do a second push because I didn't see my fucking numbers increasing at all. And I wrote to their customer service department. I called them out on Twitter, politely. I wasn't like, hey, you fuckheads. I said, hey, Audioboo, nothing. So Audioboo does not care about the customer, so screw them.
Hosted by Audioboo. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe you're listening to this somewhere else. I know that...
Or perhaps I've gotten off my ass and found a better hosting situation.
Possibly. You may also be getting this by subscribing through iTunes, which is also awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's been a chunk of time since we've done a round
weeks
of recording.
Even.
Yeah?
I think it's been a couple weeks.
Which is... I don't know. I had sort of a busier August than I think... I'm used to, and sort of the same thing with you.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's good that we could find this time and with this fancy microphone.
Woo!
So, what do we got?
Well, JP, we had the topic that we were going to talk about for the last podcast, and then we wound up talking about theater shit.
Yeah.
And
the
you
great,
wound up...
The great debate.
The great debate, destroying my dreams inspire me to create one of my favorite graphics of all time with the dead birds.
The dead birds. So not only did that last round of podcasting result in an amazing graphic with dead Canadian specific birds, but it also, as I understood, resulted in a new fetish on FetLife.
Correct.
I was about to say my first fetish, but that was going to sound really
incorrect. But your first dedicated fetish, right?
The first dedicated fetish that includes me.
Right. Congratulations. You have arrived.
Thank you. I am perfectly happy being a dream crusher.
It's like a dream catcher, but with teeth.
Yep.
And more.
Or more like a dream sniper.
Yeah.
Maybe, because it's not like.
That's right. You're not catching them. You are actually just killing them.
Yeah. And not in a way that's sort of, you know, Hulk smash.
No. No, it would be very clinical and, what's the word I'm looking for?
Correct?
Chemical. Not correct. It would be very right for me to take your little fantasy about sharing BDSM with the masses and trash it. This is my fantasy and dream. But in the course of this, we totally did not get to
the questions that we were planning to talk about.
Right, which is funny because I think we were recording that podcast I think it was the day after I'd had dinner with a friend of mine who's been my friend forever and ever, amen, who I met through the scene back in San Francisco way back in the day. And we were talking about our lives and catching up and all this awesome stuff. And then the conversation got around eventually to perv stuff, like it does.
I was going to say.
And we were talking about service orientation and kink and how those two blend or don't blend. And it's interesting because she is actually one of the very few people, I would say, and I want to talk about why I think that there are very few people like this, or the fact that that's even a controversial statement to make, who actually are strictly service-oriented in terms of her performance of service is not reliant upon having a relationship with the person she's performing service for, per se. She does have relationships. She is owned and collared and has, you know, a family with whom she's affiliated. But she also is oftentimes desirous of performing service, literally no strings attached. I just want to come and do this physical task for you. Right? And there's no expectation for or desire of any sort of emotional reciprocity. She does not need to have the petting and coddling that I, for example, need if I'm given a menial task to do because I fucking hate it. Mm-hmm. Right? So my type of service, for example, you know, for someone to be like, yeah, iron these clothes. I'm like, oh my God, can I send them out? Please, I will work 3 jobs to pay for your laundry to be done. Just please don't make me do it. Because I don't enjoy it, right? So then does that become even more awesome service? Because the sadistic top is like, oh, you hate that? Awesome. Fantastic. Right. But there aren't very many people for whom just doing that shit is completely enough. And that's all they want. And they'll come in and do the thing and leave. Now, mind you, that type of person has been elevated to this magical, mythical status by the kink and leather community, I feel, because they have the appearance of being work-free, right? You come and do shit for me and leave for free, and I don't have to do anything. I don't have to provide you emotional support. I don't have to take a call from you at 4 in the morning because you're crashing from the scene. It's easy. You get something for nothing.
Yeah, I guess the thing where the part where that maybe falls apart for me mm-hmm. is the idea that person is glorified inside of the community, but that's entirely based on the idea that the service that your friend is willing to offer mm-hmm. or is interested in offering would include, for instance, taking a beating.
It could, certainly.
Okay. So is that really the same thing as showing up and doing something for you?
It is if you are not showing up to take the beating because you're a deep masochist, right? Okay. If you are deeply masochistic and you love getting beaten at any time, regardless of your mood, then that could be seen as straight up service, right? But if you don't, For example, for me, there would be an emotional attachment to showing up and getting my ass beaten if I didn't want it. It would have to be, there would have to be a dynamic in addition to the service. Do you see what I'm saying? She doesn't need the dynamic in addition to the service in order to find that fulfillment. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I guess the things that I would be curious about, one of the things that we were talking about briefly before we started recording is the idea that service has traditionally fallen into kind of a subcategory. If you want to talk about bottom, the categories of bottom, masochist, submissive, property.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if I would consider that to be not a subcategory, but if that would be a way of being, or a form of bottom, masochist, submissive, that like a, the form of that could be property.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. It. I think that they have their own separate and distinct flavor, right? I think the people who identify as property are using that term and not the term slave because they have a very specific idea for them of what being property means. I think the person who identifies as a submissive has a very distinct idea that being a submissive is different from being a slave. They might layer on those labels, but I think that they're different and distinct.
So then what we're talking about now is a person who self-identifies as a service provider. Oh, okay. But not a service submissive.
Maybe not.
Okay.
The center point is not the submission. The center is the service, right?
Right.
So they might not feel submissive to that person at all. That person might be submissive.
Uh-huh.
I've had people in my life, I don't identify as dominant. I could top people, and I have, because beating the shit out of someone is a lot of fun. But I'm not doing it because I am the boss of them.
This is where podcasting kind of falls apart a little bit, where...
Because you got the little sparkly smile.
Yeah, I had a moment. It's funny that I'm speaking in past tense, because it's not like the moment is over.
I know.
All right, I'm just going to have to coast a little bit of the moment, but we'll keep on going with the conversation.
So that's good stuff, right? So that part I get, and I've had people who are also submissive and who also are... other slaves or other people who enjoy providing service who have said to me, may I provide service for you? And I'm not dominant. However, can I accept service? I sure can, because I know what it feels like, what good reception of service feels like to me. So if I need help, like when I was doing my title holding stuff, I had a bunch of people who were service people who helped me purely because they wanted to help me, obviously. But also because they were moved to help me in this particular way because they enjoy service and did not expect me to do dominant stuff afterwards. They did not expect me to do the emotional support that I believe is absolutely necessary if you own someone. It was not from a place of ownership. It was not from a place of me bossing them around. It was their impetus. They were basically the boss of themselves and doing stuff that they saw I needed help with. And so...
And at their own behest, not at your behest or somebody else's. Okay.
Correct. So the question becomes, who are those people? How would you identify yourself if that was your core kink? And I feel like there's not specifically a single word you can come up with. I think if you say to someone, what would you call someone who fetishizes or enjoys ownership? What would you call someone who fetishizes or enjoys... receiving sensation? What would you call someone who fetishizes or enjoys administering physical discipline? Like, those are things that we have words for. And I feel like the language got so florid and not awkward, but bigger when I had to describe what this was, even just to you.
Yeah.
I feel like that's indicative of us not having a succinct, not a slot or a box, but a label that you can help yourself to identify as such.
Okay. Could we not just use the word servant?
Sure. But where do you see that? Have you seen that as an identifier? Has anyone ever introduced themselves to you as a servant?
Not in this context.
Yeah, see? We could decide, yes, and we will now begin the trend.
From now on. Everyone who is listening.
And lobby FetLife to be like, yes, add servant.
Add servant. Well, it's interesting because...
And I think servant works. I don't think you're wrong. I also do, like, when I think of servant, the language that comes up underneath it has a lot to do with someone you would hire. And maybe money makes the transaction cleaner. That idea of, you know, servants are hired, right? A servant is a job.
Yeah.
It can also be a calling. There's certainly people who identify as servants who feel called to it.
Yes.
And I think that that works.
Servant works to a certain degree. I mean, what I start thinking of, if we're using relationships on FetLife, mm-hmm. and the way that FetLife kind of organizes or like sets out relationships, if we're using that as the sort of benchmark by which to hold this up, I mean, problematic nature of that aside,
right.
When you see things on FetLife, somebody can say they are submissive, mm-hmm. which seems to be sort of like a blanket term of, or not a blanket term, I'm sorry, it is a non-contextual identifier.
It's an identifier that is outside of the context of relationship, yes. Right? If I identify as a slave, in my opinion, mm-hmm. that is regardless of the state of my relationship-ness, right? This is my identity. I know there are some people who believe that if you are not actually owned, if you're not actually slaving, that you cannot identify as such. I'm not in that camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like you are gay whether or not you are actively fucking someone.
Yeah.
At the time.
Same.
So you have an identifier if you are a dominant person, if domination is part of your sexual makeup,
mm-hmm.
then you can say I'm a dominant and people have an idea of where to start from there. But if you look and you are saying, I am a service-oriented person who craves and desires and am fulfilled by providing service, well, submissive doesn't encompass that. Submissive in and of itself doesn't have anything to do with service.
True.
It has to do with where you put your will and how you administer that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bottoming has nothing to do with service because it has to do with receiving sensation, you know.
Masochist is the same.
Yeah. If you are a slave, that's about the ownership. That's about the possession of your body. Your humanity is a commodity.
Yeah, sort of like slave is. It's like slave could be sort of an umbrella term, and then mm-hmm. inside of slave, you can specify it a little bit more.
Right.
Like I'm sure that somebody could be. Well, that's interesting. Actually, could somebody be a slave masochist?
Mm-hmm.
Or does saying that one is a slave, sorry, is saying slave submissive redundant?
No. You could have people who are very dominant who are owned by someone else and therefore they're a slave.
Okay, so then my original thought process was true, that you use something like slave as the umbrella term, then underneath that you can specify top, bottom, sadist, masochist, dominant, submissive.
It would be the umbrella term if that's the core. I think that it's you choose the umbrella based on what the core of your thing is.
Yes.
Right? So it's like the engine for the train, mm-hmm. and then you add on as many cars as you need to create a whole vehicle for your sexuality.
So maybe servant functions in that way.
I think it does.
So then you would be a servant dominant.
Mm-hmm.
Or
there's Skip Chasey has this whole thing. You know, he has a class that he teaches called the, fuck's sake, brain. I can't remember, but
that
basically.
That is an amazingly compelling title.
That's the class. For fuck's sake's brain.
For fuck's sake's brain.
What is wrong with you today? But it's I know what it is. It's the servant master, and then it has some sort of additional tagline, right?
Okay.
But the idea that the master is in service to the dynamic of a master-slave relationship.
Okay.
You know, mm-hmm. in the same way that a religious leader is in service to the congregation and in service to God.
Yes.
So
all right.
The
yeah, that's
so
clear. I get that.
So
get
the
that.
Master therefore is serving this larger, you know, thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could have someone who identifies as service-oriented, who maybe isn't themselves the standard issue aggro dominate type,
mm-hmm.
right? who says, you know what, but I have the capacity to guide and direct and take ownership of another person and move them in the proper direction so that they are improved and they're buoyed up. And we've talked about this before in terms of the whole point of having these relationships is that there's an improvement, there's a betterment. Yes. If the improvement is through the breaking down of the ego or the destruction of the superego or just incredible amounts of suffering, because that somehow illuminates some truth for you, then the person who is administering that is in service to the person receiving it, right? It doesn't mean that they are submitting to them, but are they providing and facilitating service? And I would argue yes.
Yes. That's what it is, because what that then does is it necessitates the separation of what kink folk commonly think of as the status position of service.
Right.
And it actually takes it away from a particular status position.
Mm-hmm.
Which then in the case of your friend is interesting, because then maybe the answer for them is you start from the position of servant, from self. You start from the position of self-identifying as a servant, and then you clarify the ways in which you are prepared to serve, and you might be prepared to serve dominantly.
Right.
You might be prepared to serve sadistically. Mm-hmm. You might be prepared to serve submissively.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily completely address the problem of how do you negotiate that, or how do you express what it is that you actually are prepared to do?
Right.
How do you find a way to be that for somebody where it doesn't have to necessarily be as transactional as we tend to think it has to be?
Right.
I mean, there is still some kind of a transaction that's going on, obviously, because there always is to some form or another, but not in the same way that we usually think about it as being transactional.
Right. I think it's a different type of relationship. It is like mixing an intimate romantic relationship with a business relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
You are saying, this is what I need. This is what I'm prepared to do. We do not have to have a deeper emotional bond, romantic bond, psychological bond, whatever is commonly attached to these type of power exchange dynamics, where they're healthy, I think. It's still healthy. It's awesomely healthy because everyone's getting their needs met. But there's a stripping down of what the level of transaction is. And I'm not sure that there... I think that the idea of servant is a lot closer. Because it implies and connotes the service part of it, right? Mm-hmm. In the word. But you don't necessarily think of servants as having a deeper emotional connection, I feel. It didn't hit me like that when I heard the word.
Yes. I think that I get it and I agree.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like sometimes you can I think that there's history, I think that there's narrative around the idea of a servant actually being amazingly emotionally connected to a house.
Sure.
In terms of like a family has owned a house forever. The same family has been in service and maintained that house for years and years. I think there can be a really strong emotional bond.
I think it leaves room for it, but yes. I don't think that that's the first hit, right?
Whereas it's not I feel required.
Like no, I feel like with submissive, there's an emotional hit that comes with it, and this could be entirely my own thing.
No, I
feel like with topping and bottoming, there's not a deep emotion. There's not like a gut level hit to that. That feels very much like the there's an intensity, and the intensity I feel is very physical, you know. The intensity of topping, the intensity of bottoming, I don't feel has an instantaneous emotional connection. I feel like there are different levels and different places that people go.
Yeah. So maybe it's about vulnerability. That when you are bottoming, when you are engaging, if you're engaging in a top-bottom dynamic, there's a vulnerability. There's a shared vulnerability. The same thing as if you're engaging in a sadism-masochism dynamic or a dominant submissive dynamic. There's a vulnerability that's shared between the two people who are engaging in the dynamic. It you have to connect on that kind of a level in order for, now, to varying degrees of intensity.
Right.
But you have to have a little bit of vulnerability to a massive degree of vulnerability, depending on the dynamic, to have it resonate in a way that is mutually rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
But to be a servant, that's totally not required. You don't need to have an emotional bond to make sure that somebody's shirts are ironed.
Right,
well.
And I feel like the servant is focusing on, the servant, I feel like, is focusing on the thing, on the act, versus on the other person. I feel like mm-hmm. the top and the bottom, the master and the slave, those things are very much about the person. And I think the servant is about the thing. The servant comes in and sets a table and takes mm-hmm. away the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a focus. It's an action focus. Maybe that's the other thing that makes it feel different.
Yep.
And I think that action is folded into all of those other dynamics, but what I just realized right now is like, oh yes, you're serving, it is a verb, right? It feels verbier mm-hmm. than mm-hmm. a lot of the other things.
Verbier, yeah. No, I get it, and it's true. I just enjoyed the word verbier.
That's almost as good as, I'm gonna forget the word you made up last month.
Right.
Ah. Oh. What was that?
God damn it, I can't remember now either.
Fuck.
I just have to go back and listen to old. Everybody just go back and listen to old
podcasts. I'll put a link
podcasts.
Into the other word that you made up that was so awesome.
Okay, so
but
then...
But I feel like that is... And my language has even changed around it. I said I feel like versus I think, which I realize I've been very head about it. But that has a deeper resonance.
Mm-hmm.
That the servant is about the action.
Yes. So what's interesting about that then is it leads to the question of how to be direct about that. Mm-hmm. How to be direct around the fact that that's what you are interested in offering, that you are not interested in, you are less interested in engaging with the person
mm-hmm.
than with the thing that that person would like you to do.
Do you know who I think this is the most useful for? Is dominance. Because I feel like a lot of people want servants and they're getting slaves and submissives.
Mm.
And I feel like there are lots of people who just want you to do the shit and leave. And servants yes. would be well suited for that. And property... And slaves and submissives who crave, desire, need, seek out a deeper emotional resonance
yeah.
are not getting that.
Yes.
And I really feel like this would be the most useful for dominance to say, what I want is a servant.
Yeah.
Because if someone were to say that to me, I'd be like, great. Clink.
Yes.
Bye.
Great. I am not for you.
Because I'm not for you.
Right.
But there's
also the thing there of being able to say, I want a servant to do this and this and this,
mm-hmm.
and I want a servant to do that and that and that.
Right.
And you might be able to say, well, I can offer you this and this and this.
Correct.
It will happen inside of an emotional transaction framework.
Right.
But I can still offer it to you.
For example, if someone wanted like a sex slave, I'd be like, great, because I would like to fuck. That's perfect. And then like, and I need my shirts ironed. I'd be like, oh no, no, no.
Right.
You have to go to someone else for that.
But yeah. But that's interesting because that could be set up as a situation where one results in the other.
Don't fucking iron people. Don't go do that.
Oh, I'm not going to iron people. I mean...
You would, but my point is, don't do the sex while you're ironing.
Oh, no. No, certainly not. Nor would you want to iron while you are sexing. I will say that as well.
And I think we're going to pause now.
Yeah, so... but I think when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more. I think it's good to talk about this forms of communication and mm-hmm. clarity about asking for that which you really want
exactly.
versus that which you think you are supposed to want.
And do the sad trombone, please.
Wah, wah, wah.
Awesome.